Welcome to The Jump. I'm Rachel Nichols alongside The Jump's resident head coach and a man with two rings, Mr. David Fizdale, and the host of the Hoop Collective podcast, New York Times bestseller from the Cobra Dome, Brian Windhorst. Coming up, the Warriors finding a way to win despite a freezing cold night from Steph. Is that something, nothing, or everything? We will play one of our favorite games. First, though, how much bad stuff can you live with to still get some of the good? That has been the question facing not just sports leagues, but every person, every family, and yes, every business in this country since this whole global pandemic started. Is it really worth it to take that trip out to the grocery store? Most people think yes. What about to go to work? Well, your answer probably changes depending on how much you need that job to make rent. Or what about letting your kid play with a neighbor? What if then the neighbor tests positive for COVID and either you get it too, or even if you don't, you're told that you and your spouse and your kids need to spend a week without leaving your house, just to be sure you're not spreading it? Will that play date have felt worth it? Right now, the NBA is still answering that question with yes, even as the number of affected teams and players mount. Just this afternoon, the league announced that both tonight's Pelicans-Mavericks game and Tuesday's Celtics-Bulls game were being postponed due to COVID issues, the third and fourth such postponements of this three-week-old NBA season. And the number of players across the league who are in COVID-related protocols is mushrooming. 11 on Wednesday, 15 on Thursday. Now it jumps to 26 on Friday, 27 on Sunday. We're still getting the full count from today. Here's Brad Stevens walking off the court yesterday after the Celtics Heat game had to be postponed. That game was called due to COVID issues on the Miami side, but I'm guessing the postponement was actually a relief to the Celtics, who as of yesterday only had 8 players available themselves. Now that would have actually technically have been enough. NBA rules this season say if you got 8, you have to take the court and play. Because frankly, they need to get games in, and 8 is where they've drawn the line on the bare minimum to make that possible. But of course, that is not sitting well with everyone. Take what happened Saturday with the Sixers. After COVID and its accompanying precautions ripped through the Philadelphia locker room, Doc Rivers said he didn't think the team should be playing, that going ahead with only 8 or 9 guys would cause too much wear and tear on the players who were on the court, including stars like Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid. Now, the league disagreed, so the Sixers ended up holding Embiid and Simmons out of that day's game against Denver anyway, listing them with minor injuries, bringing their number of healthy bodies to 7. Maybe they were hoping that would trigger a postponement, but it didn't, since neither the injuries to Simmons nor Embiid had previously been reported to the league. And look, I don't know the exact conversation between the team and league officials, but to outside eyes, the message from the NBA sure seemed to be, hey, we know no team wants to only play games that count in the standings with a severely undermanned team, but you can't just force a postponement by sitting a couple extra players to get under that 8 benchmark. It's a message the NBA further amplified this afternoon when it fined Philadelphia $25,000 in relations to Simmons sitting. And if you think all of this has caused some rankling in team front offices, you would be correct. Our Adrian Wojnarowski reports that one general manager told ESPN, quote, they tell us it will be better later in this season, but I just hope this doesn't break the league in the next few weeks. Now, Woj also reports there is now a special board of governors meeting happening tomorrow and that the league's GMs are scheduled to have a conference call today to go over whether protocols should be further tightened. For example, right now on road trips, players are allowed to have a guest or two from that city visit their hotel room. It's supposed to be a family member or close friend. I don't know how much longer that's going to be allowed. There's also new scrutiny on players from opposing teams hugging or talking without masks after a game. Still, bottom line, at least right now, the NBA is expected to tell teams the league is moving forward, even if the competitive balance is a mess, even if the stop-start nature of the protocols leaves some players more vulnerable to injury. After all, this isn't just a play date. This is an $8 to $10 billion a year business. The effects of just shutting down until players are vaccinated would be catastrophic to that business, both short and long term. When those diving for their fainting couches today say, this is about the money. Yeah, Absolutely. It is about the money. Pro sports have always been about the money, and you are perfectly within your rights to be disgusted with that if you choose. But it's also the reason the NFL, Major League Baseball, college football played through postponements and positive tests. It's just that the degree of difficulty was always going to be harder for the NBA, which plays several games a week indoors with fewer bodies available per team in what now is the absolute worst spike of this virus. So should the NBA go back to a bubble? Good luck convincing players to be locked away from their families for the next 8 months. Should the league expand rosters? Seems like it. Should the guidance change on how teams hold in-person meetings and practices or whether they hold them at all? Maybe. For those who made fun of Allen Iverson about practice all those years ago, the Cleveland Browns would like a word. The hard reality is that all NBA teams, all they have faced so far in this short season, it is going to continue, probably getting worse before it gets better, as long as the league plays basketball in a pandemic. Is it worth it? So far, the league and its players say yes. So, Brian, what should the NBA do now?
So they're going to have to adopt some changes, Rachel, because while there definitely are positive tests happening, we know of a lot of them, what's really causing games to be postponed is the contact tracing. When one player gets a confirmed test, and then all of a sudden they have to put six or seven players into a contact tracing protocol. So the idea here would be to amend some of the day-to-day procedures so that you won't have to put as many players in contact tracing. Keep them farther apart, put some more measures in it, maybe not have contact tracing be so long so that you wouldn't have a devastating effect on a team. But there's another message that's going to have to get through. Rachel, there are hundreds of players in this league who have had COVID over the last 9 or 10 months. There are certain teams that have had double digits. I've heard at least one team thinks its entire roster has the antibodies. But that does not necessarily mean, as we saw with Kevin Durant, who has admitted he had COVID in the past, that you can't be put into contact tracing. And so players may be instructed to change their behavior off the court, away from team facilities, even if they are operating under the belief that they have some protection with COVID. And that's going to be a hard sell as well.
Yeah, I mean, this is difficult. This is a difficult circumstance. While COVID is peaking at its highest moments right now, I do think that they're going to have to put more protocols in place to try to protect these guys. But at the end of the day, I think people are just going to get it. You know, it's just inevitable. It's too many different layers to it to where people have contact and can possibly, you know, contract it. And so I think teams are going to have to keep, you know, really being strict with their players. Players have to be pros about this to make sure that everyone's staying healthy in the building. And ultimately, we're going to see postponed games. That's just going to be part of the deal. But I do think they're going to keep moving forward. And eventually, maybe, by the time we get to the playoffs, you may see another bubble then. And now we get everybody in the building like we did in Disney last year, which went off amazing. But I think they got to get to that point. And look, if you want to be high in the standings, if this is important to you to go after this championship, then you have to make sacrifices about where you go and who you interact with. And if teams aren't taking care of business and their whole team is getting COVID, then somebody or multiple people on that team is not really serious about what they're doing and not being professional. So I do think the league has to be very strict about this. And they have to get a hold on this so that we can move forward with a successful season.
And it's an important distinction, right? Look, people who test positive for COVID haven't necessarily done anything wrong. There are so many people I know who have tried to do everything the right way. And this virus creeps in. That is how this works.
But
there is also a matter of, hey, you can try to mitigate your risk. And your point about having to sacrifice goes exactly to what Brian was just saying. The idea that in players' personal lives, especially, do you, and I'm not talking about crazy stuff. I'm not talking about wildly irresponsible stuff. I'm talking about the same stuff the rest of us are all grappling with. Hey, we haven't had a barbecue in 6 months. Can we finally have one? It's outside. Hey, my kid really is desperate for just some human contact. They want to play with their friends. These are things that all Americans are dealing with every day as the spike in coronavirus cases.
Wow.
I can't even call it a spike anymore. Just the way cases continue to mushroom in this country are dealing with. And the level of sacrifices that players may be asked to make from here on out to mitigate some of the contact tracing issues that Brian is talking about. Kevin Durant, the example he gave, a friend or family member having a positive test is what caused him to sit right, for those days, even though he already had COVID, even though he did test to still have antibodies now. We don't know enough to have him just mix with the rest of the team, so he had to sit. And it's going to be harder and harder for players to just live their daily lives. And to your point, Fizz, they have to decide, is it worth it? It's what I started the show with. Right. Is it worth it? We are all having to decide over and over again every day with every interaction we have. Is it worth it? And it, of course, extends to what Doc Rivers was upset about.
Yes.
In that Philly game Saturday against the Nuggets, the seven players who played, three played more than 40 minutes, including rookie Tyrese Maxey, who scored 39. Doc explained before the game his concern about any of his players playing that much. Take a listen.
I'm more concerned with health on the floor. You know, we're going to play players tonight that haven't played a lot of minutes. You know, I'm not going to, you know, so like when you got seven bodies, if someone's going to have to play 40 plus minutes. And so, and that's not just for today. That's long-term health, you know, with the accumulation of games. You know, it's the numbers we want to stay away from with our players.
All right. So, Fizz, you know Doc's pain. You've had to manage minutes in your time
Absolutely.
As a head coach. What would your concerns be when faced with the same situation as Doc?
He's hitting it on the head. I mean, the one thing I think all of us coaches have become over the last few years is like sports scientists.
Right.
Like unofficially, right? So we have learned that there is a science to the fact that if a guy is playing so many minutes, say 5 minutes a game, low minute guy, and all of a sudden he jumps up to 40 minutes a night playing competitive NBA basketball against the best players in the world, that could lead to injury, especially over cumulative nights. And so he's right. And so, again, the league is going to have to figure out how do we work this so that, one, we're protecting our players from COVID, but at the same time, we're protecting our players on the court from getting serious injuries, you know, pulls, you know, twists, things like that that can have you out for a whole year, for 6 months, things like that. And so, yes, Doc is right. When you're a coach, you're trying to manage all of this, and when you got seven guys, you really don't have a choice. Most of those guys are going to play close to 40-plus minutes, and that's just the situation that you're
in. When they came up with this eight-player rule, it wasn't in the COVID era, and maybe it would happen one time or two times a year in the entire NBA, and maybe it would just happen for one night because a guy or two had a twisted ankle or was under the weather for one day. This rule, this eight-player rule, was not built for contact tracing that lasts 7 days. And so there's really only two options. You're either going to have to reevaluate the contact tracing rules as a result of new protocol, or they're going to have to consider expanding the rosters, which they've already done a little bit of by allowing 10-day contracts, which they don't usually allow at this point in the season. We've seen a couple of teams sign hardship players. Before this season started, Rachel, the NBA kicked around extending the amount of two-way players from two per team to four per team, or even, you know, negotiate to three. They ended up not doing that. They may have to relook at that to see, to give a little bit more of a buffer.
Yeah, and look, that's complicated too, right, Brian? Because I was listening to the Hoop Collective podcast on the way into work today. It's excellent. I recommend it to everyone. And you and Tim Bontemps and Royce Young were discussing a team like Boston had 14 players available when they went to bed and eight players available when they wake up the next day because of contact tracing concerns. And so you couldn't get... Even if you had those expanded rosters, right, could you get the guys you would need in the right place at the right time for the game?
Well, you might be able to, but you can't just sign the guy off the street. Like in the past, we've seen guys sign at 10 a.m. and start at 7:30. Now a player would have to go through a quarantine. You can't just sign them. So even getting a new player takes days. So you would ideally like to have those players healthy. But again, if they're ensnared in contract tracing, you're in the same boat. You know, the Major League Baseball had this sort of taxi squad where they had like guys located down the road sort of playing simulated games, and that helped them grease the skids. I don't know if the NBA could look at something like that, but the G League is headed towards a bubble, and even that has issues because even if you plucked players out of the bubble who were playing well and healthy and ready and in shape, they would have to quarantine because they'd have to travel from Orlando to join the team wherever they are. This is just really complicated. The league is going day by day.
Yeah, and of course, if you do expand the rosters and those guys are in your traveling party, it means that you might be more open to contact tracing issues because that's one more guy who might be bringing COVID into the group. It is complicated. Welcome back to The Jump. I'm Rachel Nichols, joined here in Los Angeles by Coach David Fizdale, remotely by our friend insider Brian Windhorst. Let's talk about the Brooklyn Nets, gentlemen. They lost to the Thunder at home last night, although again, I'm going to say it, throwback Eunice, happy. Kevin Durant scored 36 points in his return to the lineup after a three-game absence due to the league's COVID protocols. Kyrie Irving, still out, missed the last three games due to undisclosed personal reasons, and Steve Nash had no update for the media on him today. So, Coach, what is your level of concern for the Nets after a 5-6 start?
I'm kind of torn on it, right? Like, I do have a lot of concern. I've always had the same concerns of health was always the big one. You know, Dinwiddie, three games he's only played. KD and Kyrie
and now he's out.
And KD and Kyrie seven games apiece. And so that was always my big concern anyway about them. I remember when we brought the big three together and we started off 9-8. And it was all kind of stuff in the air, right?
Did that get public attention? I bet.
Oh, it was a mess.
I remember.
Windhorst remembers.
It was a daily breathless update.
Oh, my goodness. You would have thought the world was coming to an end. But we won 22 out of 23 after
yes,
that.
Yes, I do.
And this team has that kind of talent.
Yes.
And, you know, I'm just hoping for the best for Kyrie and that he gets back on the court fast because, again, all of us wants to see this team playing together and them exciting the league and showing what they can do.
Yeah.
Yeah, Coach, you're so right. I mean, health is going to define how this team goes, especially because Kyrie and Durant have availability has been, you know, in question. But to me, I still think their biggest thing they've got to wrestle with is defense. And I know that their defensive numbers don't look so bad, but, you know, fundamentally, they are a suspect defensive team. The Oklahoma City Thunder, who are not a juggernaut, even though they have a better record than the Nets right now, had 66 points in the paint in this game. That is not allowable. You just can't do it. And, you know, again, 129 points they give up. I know they've got a great offense, but especially when they don't have full power, when Kyrie is out, you can't go out there and get into a scoring match. And they have yet to prove on a night-in and night-out basis that they can defend at the level to be a championship team. And to me, that's going to be the story the whole season.
And look, anybody who's been watching the NBA for 10 minutes knows there is a huge difference between what gives you good or acceptable numbers in the regular season versus what happens during the playoffs and whether you get eaten up and spit out by your opponents. We saw a regular season versus playoffs issue with the Milwaukee Bucks this past season. We see it every year, and that is exactly what Brian is talking about. All right, Karl-Anthony Towns returned to the Wolves lineup Saturday. I want to give that some attention. He missed six straight games with a wrist injury. Obviously, an incredibly difficult season for him overall. He scored 25 points in his return. Now, he did sit out Sundays back-to-back as a precaution, according to the team. Brian, what impact do you think Kat's return has on the Wolves' season going forward? Because they're not going anywhere without him, but even with him, what do you see?
Right. Yeah, I mean, they're already teetering with where their record is. And Karl Towns said that when he first saw the doctor with this wrist injury, which is a dislocated bone in his wrist, I can't say I've seen it or even heard about it very often. They told him he was looking at 6 to 8 weeks.
Ooh.
If he was out 6 weeks, I think the Timberwolves would have been done. And I mean, they are already, like I said, in a gray zone, you know, at this point. So he's pushing it, coming back at 2 weeks. Now, he put up good numbers in his first game. He said he doesn't have great feeling in that hand, that he doesn't have, you know, that hand is not really that functional. But if he can put up those numbers, he's given them a chance. And coming back now, you know, it's a move. We'll see whether or not it pays off for them. But, you know, he was supposed to be out a month longer.
Mm. Yeah, and I just think, one, he'll galvanize them. I mean, after everything that they've gone through, I think the team will rally around him. I think with him, they're a fringe playoff team, maybe. Like, they really got to play well. But without him, there's no chance. And it's, like I said, it's tough in the West. So even with him, I think it's very difficult for them to get into the dance. But he is just a huge factor for them. I think his whole, you know, purpose right now is to honor his mom, honor his family, play with great joy, find something every day to appreciate in her honor. And you know, hopefully his team will rally around him and we could see some exciting basketball come out of Minnesota.
Yeah, it's still incredibly hard. He has talked about the fact that, you know, look, I can't just lose myself in basketball. Some people can do that after a huge loss. He said, that's not it. He said, every time I step on the court, all I think about is my mom's not here. Yeah. And I have such admiration for him going forward with everything that he and so many Americans have been through this past year, dealing with deaths due to coronavirus. And I think I think it is going to be tough for that team. It's such a shame because the high expectations I know that they had, especially getting Kat and D'Lo together in the first place. Mm-hmm. They sort of mapped out what they wanted the next 2 to 3 years to look like. And this is certainly not happening right now. All right, let's talk a little bit about the Mavericks. Kristaps Porzingis expected to make his debut today, but that was before Mavericks Pelicans was postponed. He has been recovering from meniscus surgery. Now, Fizz, the Mavs currently in the middle of the pack in the West with a 5-4 record. Does the return of a healthy unicorn put them in the upper echelon of the conference?
Absolutely. It's no question about this. First off, how good is Luka? Let's just put that out there. 5-4 in the West, no Kristaps. Yep. And Dallas has a good basketball team surrounding them. I don't want to just say it, it's like it's just them. But Kristaps Porzingis showed when he's on the team and when he's out there playing for them, you saw in the Clippers series, how big was that to have him out there?
Sure.
He was ejected. Totally different deal. When he went out with the injury, totally different deal. If he was in that series, they might have had a chance to really win that series, and I'm not stretching on that. So him being that stretch set, that seven-footer, that defensive guy at the rim with Luka Doncic, definitely in the top pack, top of the pack in the West.
Yeah, are they a high-level team with Porzingis? Yes. Are they a championship contender? I still think they're a piece away, and I think they know that, which is why they've cleared out cap space and why they, you know, had dreams of Giannis, and why they may look in the trade market, whether it's during the season or in the summer. It doesn't have to be another all-star player, but I still think they need another high-level piece. Now, we still don't really know what the ceiling for Luka is, and Rick Carlisle has been a little bit disappointed with their level of focus early in the season. They can improve that, and they're better with Porzingis. I think they're dangerous, but I don't think they're where they need to be. And look, those two guys are young and signed to long-term contracts. They have runway. Let's see what they do.
And of course, this is another team where, again, their game was canceled. Sorry, not canceled. The game was postponed tonight. Having COVID issues affect the team can affect your record in a shortened season. Every game is one of 72, not one of 82. Maxi Kleba had been playing lights out for them, and now he is going to be off the board for a while. So that will also affect which echelon they end up in when we look at the final standings at the end of this regular season. All right, coming up, guys, LaMelo Ball became the youngest player in NBA history to record a triple-double this weekend. Are you not entertained? Producer Steve is. It's part of our Something Nothing or Everything segment up next. First, though, here's what the Jump recommends for today on ESPN Plus. Kevin Pelton explains why teams are so inconsistent right now, from blowouts to upsets. Pelton explains how COVID-19 is making this the most unpredictable NBA season ever. You can check that out during the break. Welcome back to The Jump. I'm Rachel Nichols, joined by Coach David Fizdale, our insider Brian Windhorst, and time for us to play, really, it's America's favorite game, Something, Nothing, or Everything. Starting with the Warriors, who took down the Raptors. That's right. Shout out Kevin Wiles at home in a one-point victory, despite Steph going 2 of 16 from the field. Worst shooting performance of his career, minimum 5 shots taken. So, Brian, the Warriors beating the Raptors, despite Steph going 2 for 16, Something, Nothing, or Everything.
This has got to be everything, because if you'd have told me 10 days ago that the Warriors could have won a game that Steph shot like this, much less been within 10 or 15, I would have told you no way. They have improved so much over this last, this homestand, really. Andrew Wiggins has played so much better, and the return of Draymond Green made this possible, and great win. Kind of take off your hat to them.
Yeah, this is everything, because Steph Curry built up their confidence with his play. He said, I can carry us to a certain point. Those guys felt good about their roles. And when Steph Curry couldn't get it done for them, he had put enough confidence in these guys that they stepped up and carried the torch for him and got it. This is a great victory for Golden State. And you can't forget, Draymond Green is a champion. Steve Kerr, Mike Brown, the rest of the staff are big-time coaches. They're going to win games like this because they have that kind of staff, and you can see it now. They're starting to make Andrew Wiggins a part of what they're doing and really highlighting his talents and putting him in the position to do well. And so this is an everything win for them. I'm happy for them. Hopefully they can keep it going.
This is where I get to pull out the Kendrick Perkins I told you voice on day 2 of the NBA season when I said, look, what happened opening night. Don't bury the Warriors. Lakers yet. I still believe.
Can't bury them, no.
Right? So, I mean, look, we obviously see how the season goes, but this is why. Don't bury the Warriors. They have a lot going on that team.
Carry
that is
on.
Good. Exactly. Carry on, as our friend Kendrick would say. Next up, LaMelo Ball became the youngest player in league history to record a triple-double. 22 points, 12 rebounds, 11 assists for the Hornets. Their third straight win. That was Saturday. Now, here he is after the game on what's helped him when it comes to rebounding. Take a listen.
You're a natural rebounder. What's the key during that?
I mean, I played a lot of 21 growing up, so it's just a whole lot of basketball, for real. It's pretty much just instincts, I guess.
All right, Fizz, something, nothing, or everything.
That's everything. That's everything. He just threw out our game. 21. More kids need to go to the park and play 21. And for y'all that don't know what it is, a guy goes to the line. He shoots free throws. When he misses, you got to go rebound the ball, and then it's one-on-one. Mm-hmm. And not enough guys play 21. Good shout-out, kid. He's got bragging rights in the house. He got the triple-double before his brother.
That's right.
And we give his pops a lot of crap. This guy's raised two big-time basketball players and kids, because if you know these kids, they're big-time guys. They're going to be great professionals, and I'm happy to see this. But 21, you got to love it.
This is everything. The LaMelo's first 10 games, I don't think could have gone better, considering what he was being asked to do, joining a team, you know, a couple of weeks before he made his debut at 19 years old.
Wow.
I had sort of moderate expectations for him because his shooting woes in the previous leagues, you know, he just didn't shoot the ball real well. Well, guess what? He's shooting 36% on three, which is really good, which it looks like it's only going to improve. He's shooting in the mid-40s overall. And James Borrego, the Hornets coach, has done a really nice job of keeping the pressure off him. He's not starting him, but he's looking for ways to play him with their other guards. And they're 5-5. They've had some injuries, but I think he's done a great job. And I think LaMelo is off to I would give him an A. To you know, considering everything. I know he's not, you know, averaging huge numbers, but I think all things considered, it's been a terrific start to his career.
Yeah, and by the way, Fizz, you mentioned the Ball brothers. Don't forget, the middle kid, LiAngelo, is in the G League. So, I mean, those are three professional basketball players. You talk about more kids should go to the playground and play 21. As LaMelo said, this was his backyard. He didn't have to go to the playground. This is that concrete backyard that we've seen so many times on TV.
Sun up to sun down, we played 21. When we weren't playing pickup, we was playing 21.
Boom.
Simple as that.
There you go. All right, guys, up next, CJ upped his scoring this year. Which CJ? You don't have to ask. You know which CJ. How does this leap affect the Blazers' outlook? We'll discuss this after the break.
Well, first off, in order to learn, you have to understand what you don't know. And most people don't understand that they don't know, and so they're just, and that's just what it'll be. You know, it's like a drug addict. The first step to rehab is admitting that you're a drug addict. And so when you have all these internet sensations thinking they know the game of basketball, they would then have to admit that they don't know basketball.
My favorite part about that Draymond fight is that afterward, several people who like to talk about basketball on the internet were like, see, yeah, he wasn't talking about me. He was talking about the rest of you. You heard Draymond's opinion of internet sensations who, quote, know nothing about basketball. Do you agree with Dre's opinion, Coach?
Yeah, absolutely. There's some idiots online. I'm not even going to sugarcoat it. But, you know, to be fair to most fans, there's some good fans out there. But they also never know the whole story, right? They see what they see out there and they think they know what they know because of what they're looking at. Usually, that's only a little bit, but what's happening behind the scenes is the big picture.
Yeah.
Well, I don't think Draymond was just talking about fans. I think he was talking about talking heads.
There we go.
As well. And somebody who's crossed
ones. Not,
swords.
Not that one. Not you.
Well,
the internet ones.
Well, listen, I'll just say this. I encourage, as someone who's crossed swords with Draymond before and highly respects him, I think in this world, especially at this level, I encourage everybody to hold everybody else accountable, whether it's that internet sensations or whether that's players who are going back in media who don't have the whole story. So I encourage accountability. Let's keep it up.
Absolutely. All right, I want to get to our League Pass game of the night. It's a busy Monday, though now only 7 games because of the postponement due to COVID. Our producers not allowed to choose a national game, remember. So they're choosing Raptors-Blazers, 10 p.m. Eastern time. Toronto struggling 2-7 this season, limping toward the end of their 4-game road trip where they can then go home where they're also on the road. Portland being helped by the scoring of C.J. McCollum. C.J., man, upped his scoring this year. Currently fourth in the league, first in three-pointers made per game. So, Brian, how does C.J.'s scoring leap change the math for the Blazers this season?
This is unusual for a player at this point in his career to have this explosion, so incredible. The Blazers are going to go as far as their defense takes them. That's their huge challenge. It was their huge challenge in the offseason. It remains that way.
Yeah, he's absolutely right. And I just look at the Blazers a lot like the Mavericks. Like, it's like they're just still one piece away from really taking a huge jump. But to see CJ doing this on the same team as Dame Lillard, that is what's really impressive. And I think the more they can work Nurkic into the mix, I think that's going to be big. I mean,
he is in some way your third player.
Yeah, he's really talented. And so if he can really get his game going for them, and he's playing limited minutes right now, I think once he really gets his legs under him, we can see what Portland can become.
And look, I'm curious what happens with the Blazers defensively. They brought in who they brought in this offseason, Robert Covington primarily, to try to help on the defensive end. But they're also instituting a new system, and they're doing it when practices are limited because of coronavirus, coaching opportunities are limited because of coronavirus, and they are sticking with it even through some difficult games, which I think is admirable, and I'm curious to see. And, of course, they're shifting and adjusting it as they go, but I'm curious to see if it ends up paying off for them down the road. All right, guys, this just in at the buzzer. The general manager's meeting we referred to at the top of the show has just ended. Brian, what have you heard about what happened?
Yeah, so they had a call today. I don't know if it's officially over. Yeah, I think it's over. They may still be still on there, but so there's going to be what they wanted to do is prepare them and the coaches for changes that are going to be coming. The league office believes that they're going to get through this time, that it's going to get better when we get to February. But in the short term, we could see some changes. Among the things that were discussed, I am told, the elimination of shoot-around, the reduction of overall practices, whether it's number or time, more mask wearing, and potentially limitations on people who can be around players, which would have to be collectively bargained, but there are also conversations with the union. As you mentioned earlier, Rachel, one of the things being targeted is guests who may be able to come visit players when they're on the road. Keeping in mind that
Brian,
teams are on the road sometimes two and three days in the same city now because of the block scheduling.
Right now, it is supposed to be 1 to 2 either family members or close, longtime friends.
Right.
I was joking with the guys off the air. I would not want to be the team security officer trying to interrogate a player on when he met this girl on Instagram. Has it been long enough? I don't know. Because that's difficult, right? As coaching. I mean, all jokes aside, it's difficult to monitor for teams.
All of this is just, it's a new world. It really is. And I'll tell you one thing for sure. You will not hear complaints out of players about missing shoot around. You're not going to.
That's true.
Oh, I used to have to pull
right,
drag a lot of
we'll
guys.
We'll never come back, Coach. We'll never come back.
Yeah, I had to drag a lot of guys into those early morning shoot-arounds on game day. So you won't hear much complaining there. But, again, this is going to be something that we learn how to deal with as we go. So, you know, this is good, I think, that the league are putting in these stipulations. They have to put more restrictions in to make sure that everyone's safe because, again, it's not just about the players. It's about who else they can infect and people around them who are more prone to really suffer.
And they're looking at times the players are with each other without masks on. I mean, it's funny with this contact tracing, we're learning kind of who eats dinner together, right? I mean, that's
right.
Kind of what we're seeing on these blocks of players on a team, who spends time together without wearing
the
masks.
Clicks.
And that is something that they will look at even further. All right, thank you so much, Brian, for that update. Thank you, Coach Fizz, for everything today. We'll be back tomorrow on ESPN. Enjoy the national.